Eskom still busy connecting. Let me welcome everybody here today. Let me also apologize to Member Banda. You are the leader of the delegation. Okay, I will request you. I don't know whether you finished connecting. While they're still busy connecting, then introduce your team. We will also introduce ourselves, and then we'll take it from there.
Thanks, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. Good morning to yourself and also to the honorable members. Madam Chair, first of all, I would like to just apologize for my colleague who couldn't be here to do the presentation today, so I'm doing that on his behalf, at least the second part of the presentation. On my left-hand side, I have Peter Sibula, who looks after the Western region as the general manager. And then I've got on my right-hand side, Justice Mabungu, who is with the group communication department. And then I've got Jan De Beer, who is at head office group distribution. And he basically manages the interface between distribution and the municipalities, and amongst other things that he does in the organization. Madam Chair, we're just trying to get the presentation up on the screen. I don't know if you'd like to allow the opportunity to do the introductions on your side first, and then I will take you through the presentation.
Thank you, Ayanda. That's what I said. I said after you introducing your team, yourself and your team, then we will, as members, introduce ourselves so that we know who we're talking to. I'm Priscilla Temba. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. As you know, that public enterprise is one of the state-owned enterprises and under the Department of Public Enterprises. I represent Mpumalanga province. So that's why your presentation, we would be very glad if we get information of provinces. Next to me is...
Hi, I'm Wesley Douglas. I'm from the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, and I represent the Western Cape on this body.
Joel Subia, Limpopo Province.
Morning, Sherry Kent, my name. Apologies for the confusing of the venue this morning. I'm presenting for Harkin.
Still busy? Next to me, we've got Serene Kassim, the Secretary to the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. Are you ready?
Madam Chair, it appears that there is a technical problem in terms of seeing the presentation. However, we have circulated the presentation. Would you be comfortable if we take you through the paper copies that you have in front of you?
I don't think there's a problem in the meantime. We've got a technician sitting behind. Yes, can you assist us?
Somehow there's no communication between that and the machine here. Madam Chair, would you like me to continue anyway? Okay.
You can continue because as I said earlier, the Select Committee, we are stretched to so many committees. That's why you see even other members are not here. They will join us. And from here, we will still be going to other others. So we won't waste time by waiting for the...
Okay. Madam Chair, the presentation is in two parts. I've got a very short presentation. It's about 10 pages. In total, but it's really in two parts. The key questions that were asked to ESCOM were the first one being the involvement of the municipalities in this load shedding period, and then how are we going to spend the 60 billion rand that the shareholder is going to give to ESCOM. So this presentation attempts to take you through that process to get some clarity or to give some clarity to the subcommittee as to how that works. Now, when they, if I can just take you back a bit to give you some context into the presentation. When we had load shedding in January this year, we then decided at ESCO that we actually need to have a ESCOM recovery team that is basically going to be looking at three phases of recovery. The first one being the stabilization of the system so that we don't experience a total collapse of the grid. And then the second one was the power rationing phase, which was to last for four months. And then the last phase would be the power conservation program, which is envisaged to last for about 4 years. So that is basically the context that basically started off this whole process of having to interact with a number of stakeholders. Now, if you go to your second slide, you will see that we have shown a number of interfaces that we have currently between ESCOM and various bodies in the government and other stakeholders. For example, you have your various departments, DME, DTI, DPE, Treasury, DPLT, and DEET, and through your interministerial committee, there is some interaction at that level where the issues of electricity emergency are discussed. And then within ESCOM, I've already mentioned that we've got the ESCOM recovery team, which basically looks at those three key phases with the intention, if you look at the at our system, we have said a number of times that our reserve margin is very low. It's sitting at 8%, between 8 and 10% as we speak, which makes it very challenging for us to do our maintenance. And it actually makes it very challenging for us to balance the supply and demand. So our focus really from a recovery team point of view is to look at what we can do to on the supply side in terms of supply side management and what we can do also on the demand side in terms of demand side management. Now, the interfaces that I'm going to be taking you through today are really focusing more on your demand side management side in terms of interacting with the customers and making sure that we manage our risks on the demand side. Now, if you go to the third slide also just shows that there are many forums that are currently taking place within the within South Africa where these issues are discussed. We've got the National Electricity Response Team, NERT, which is led by DME, which is really there to make sure that the implementation of the electricity emergency program is executed timeously. We also have other stakeholders forums, like the Forum of Executives.
Okay, welcome, Honorable Gamete. Honorable Gamete is representing KwaZulu-Natal in the National Council of Provinces, and he's a member of this committee. I did apologize earlier that other members are attending other meetings. Honorable Gamete.
Okay,
thank you, Madam Chair. And I was on this slide, the third slide, that basically shows the various forums that we have and the fact that and to highlight the fact that the municipalities are by and large represented in a number of those forums. I've already talked to your NERT, which is your National Emergency Electricity Response Team, which is led by DME and basically to make sure that the electricity emergency plan is executed. And then we also have the Industry Task Team, which is basically where we interact with our industrial customers to make sure that the 10% reduction that we have been talking about quite a lot is actually implemented through discussions and negotiations. And we also form work groups with a number of stakeholders so that we can get more cooperation and collaboration in as far as our efforts are concerned. Now, going to the next slide, you can see that, as I've mentioned, your municipality need to play a very, very big role on the demand side management. In other words, the 10% reduction that we normally talk about, this is where they would really play a very key role in ensuring that they support us and they look at implementing the specific programs that we together work as a team. And one thing that I might mention perhaps at this point is that we also have the National Task Team, which was formed in April. If my memory serves me well, we've met three times already, and we're going to be meeting again on Friday. The meeting essentially is to, you know, get together, get the minds together, and to see in concrete terms how can we actually achieve the 10% reduction. And there was a meeting on Friday. I believe that Jan could have attended the meeting. If there are many questions or clarity that is required on that, he can provide that as well. And then the last slide on this particular topic is that if you go back now to the task team that I was talking about, we identified the top 12 municipalities that we interact with. Because as you can imagine, you know, dealing with 180-plus customers or on a one-on-one, it becomes a major challenge because we need to also make sure that we align the efforts, we have consistency, we have equity in our efforts. So we have targeted the top 12 because we also believe that if you look at the amount of savings that you can get, you know, that is where the 80-20 principle would definitely be easiest to achieve the 10% reduction. And of course, the whole issue around 10% reduction is to make sure that we don't get to the load shedding, which is very, very disruptive. And we have always done it very reluctantly and, you know, as really as a last resort. So, Madam Chair, that basically then concludes the first part of the presentation, which deals with how we involve the municipalities in the whole load shedding issue. So I would like to take a breather at this point, unless you would like me to continue with the presentation, Madam Chair.
Continue.
The second part of the presentation really deals with the how are we going to spend the 60 billion rand that is going to be given to us by the shareholder. Also here, perhaps to give this some context, I think I need to just go back to the whole issue of reserve margin and the fact that if you go back to 2002, our reserve margin was sitting at 25% at the time. And then we went down to 2006, it declined to a value of 16%, and as I said earlier, we are sitting at about 8% in 2008. Now, that is one of the challenges that we have in the declining reserve margin. It's an indication that we need to put some power stations on the ground so that we can improve network security and reliability. And it was only in 2004 that we were allowed to build power stations in Eskom, as we all know. Now, looking at our program, go back to our program that we are planning to implement in the next 5 years. It is in the reach, it is over 300 billion rand in terms of for the next 5 years. Now, where would that money come from? Well, primarily three sources. The first one being the revenue, in other words, having to increase the tariffs. The second part is to get money from the markets, in other words, debt, 50% internationally and 50% local markets. And then the last one, of course, is shareholder equity, which would be the 60 billion rand that the government they would give us. Now, in terms of how that money would be used, I think we can't really just isolated and say, well, where is the 60 billion rand going to be used? It's actually a package. It comes as a package because it comes through those three means of funding, which or sources of funding that I have already talked to. Now, if you go to slide number 7, which is entitled Build at the Top, you can see that Eskom is planning to put on the ground by 2025 40,000 megawatts of capacity. Now, that is a number of power stations that we want to put on the ground. And that basically means that we're doubling what we currently have in the system. Now, we also have the open cycle gas turbines at Atlantis and Mossel Bay, which total to about 1,000 megawatts combined. We want to add a further 1,000 megawatts to that by the end of 2009, which is next year. We're actually trying to make sure that by the winter next year, we do have that 1,000 megawatts available online. 2012, we expect that our Medupi power station, which is over 4,000 megawatts, will be on the ground as well. We are working very hard on that, and contracts have been awarded for the work to happen. The return to service of some of the power stations that were mothballed will also give us a sizable amount of megawatts, 1,600 and 200 megawatts. And that is essentially part of where the 60 billion rand would be making a contribution. The next slide, number 8, then outlines from 2009 to 2013 the number of projects that we're going to be embarking on. And what I just want to draw your attention to is the last column that says total, because if you look at where that 300 billion rand is going, you can see that a huge percentage of it is going to go to generation, which is basically where you're going to be putting your power stations on the ground. Transmission, of course, we need transmission lines so that we can get that power out of those power stations, and then we can get them down to the end customers. And then on the distribution side, of course, we need to manage the growth and make sure that we can support the growth that is taking place, and that the energy that is coming from the new power stations has a way of getting to our customers through that particular growth. And the electrification funding, we haven't included it here because it is primarily funded by DME, so we haven't included it in this particular slide. Now, if you go to the next slide, it talks a little bit more about the specific project. Where is this money going to? It's going to Medupi, which is the power station I mentioned earlier. It's going to Bravo, which is also another power station of the similar size to Medupi. Gas 1, Ingula, which is a pump storage and wind project, which is part of the mix that we would like to have in our portfolio. Then, Madam Chair, if we can just go to the slide that says further considerations. One of the issues that has been quite important to Eskom from a funding point of view is the whole issue of credit rating maintenance. You know, credit, if you have a credit rating that is good, it means that it will be easier to access funds. It means that the cost of funds is not going to be astronomical. Because if it is astronomical, it means that it's going to have to pass over to the customers. And it also makes sure that we get funds from companies that are reputable. So it is really essential from an Eskom point of view that we do maintain that credit rating as far as possible. And we also need to maximize the available funding options and also make sure that we have long-term financial market access, because this is a long program. If we're going to be putting 40,000 megawatts on the ground by 2025, it really is a long time, and it's a long time that we need to be able to get the funding. Of course, 300 billion rand is a lot of money to be funded off our balance sheet, so it is very necessary for us to make sure that we can secure the funding. Otherwise, if we cannot secure the funding, it becomes a challenge to to execute that 340 billion rand expansion program, which also means that the security of supply actually comes under heavy pressure. The next slide, Madam Chair, I've already talked to when I did the introduction on the tariffs in terms of source of funding, your revenue, increasing of tariffs, your sourcing money from the markets, which is basically borrowings, and then shareholder equity, which is the 60 billion rand that we're talking about today. Now, just a note at the end of that slide is that the level of price increases awarded will directly impact the quantum of shareholder support that is required. So if any of those three items that I mentioned or any of the two become or are at risk, then the shareholder equity would have to be relooked as well. As I said, in terms of how we're going to be spending the 60 billion rand, which is on the last slide, Madam Chair, is that this 60 is really going to be used in the context of all the projects that have been approved. And we are in the process of discussing the terms and conditions with the shareholder of how this money is going to be made available, and that it's not going to be utilized for operating costs or primary energy, primarily for your capital expenditure. And as I've already mentioned, Madam Chair, it's not really allocated to any specific project. It's going to be looked at in relation to the portfolio of projects that we have to execute and to make sure that we can get our security of supply and the reliability of supply, Madam Chair. And I think that, in essence, concludes the presentation. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ayanda. Members, we have been listening to the presentation from ESCOM. My concern is Ayanda, the plan that you have to meet the increase in demand for this winter. That's the concern that I have. If you can maybe explain to us how you are planning to actually deal with the increasing demand for this present winter. Honorable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just with regards to the demand supply management, can you give me an idea of what portion of our current energy outlay is going to the mines? And in the mining industry, what percentage of the total amount of mines have reduced their usage by 10% to this point? Then also, a question on the new generators or facilities that you are busy building or aiming to build. Do we have the capacity and the skills both to build it as well as to run it and to maintain it on the ground in South Africa at the moment? I know that there is a serious skill shortage, and I want to know what is being done to deal with that particular problem, because it's pointless building these places if we do not have the correct amount of skills and abilities on the ground. And then I've got one or two other questions, but I'll come back to it. And then also, what powers does the National Task Team have when trying to get municipalities to cooperate with the national plan, which is decided upon, especially those 12, which are the biggest uses, besides load shedding, obviously? And then where provincially are these new plants going to be situated? And then how many jobs do you think will be created through the building of these programs, this whole program, as well as sustainable jobs for skilled people in the near future? I've been covered by the chairperson in terms of the winter and what kind of load shedding we can look at. I'll leave it at that for now. Thanks.
second.
My question is also on this, the winter's energy usage about it. You seem to be now, people on the grassroots quite confused regarding either are we going to carry on with the load shedding, or are we going to carry on with the load shedding, and then I think seem to be from the media, from time to time, getting all different information on that. So how can the ESCOM will be able to pass this message, you know, to the user or to the people in the a very very clear channel, and make people understand, you know, what the data which they are spending on that thing.
Okay, the other one, ESCOM applied to the National Energy Regulator for a tariff increase of 53%, maybe. If you can tell us what is going to be the effect of NERSA not granting the 53% increase in tariff that ESCOM applied for.
Thanks, sir, and thanks for that earlier apology. The question would be the issue of funding, the more than 300 billion rand. It is quite clear that the 60 billion rand will come from government. Is it possible that at this stage you could say roughly the balance? So that it is loud and clear, because if you start on a footing, you start with 60 billion rand. It's a little bit general to say then the rest will come from all these things that are mentioned. Can you sort of break them down? You know, 60 billion from government, how many billions from interest, and what have you? So that come next year, we don't say. But this is what you said you'll do, but this is what you said you'll get. And the issue of the terms and conditions of the 60 billion, when is that likely to be finalized? Now, if you've got the 60 billion and still you haven't finalized the terms and conditions, the last one will be on the tariff increases. How is it going to impact the different sectors in the communities, whether it's business or the people on the ground, and whether really it has been agreed upon and in black and white that there is going to be a 53% increase. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. And I also apologize, my chairperson already apologized for me. My question is on the new houses that have been built that is without electricity, that still needs electricity. And then the new houses that is going to be built after the budget now by the municipalities, is this amount of money going to accommodate those as well, and will it up with that need that is going to be there? Thank you very much.
Over to you, Ayanda, and your team.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think let me start with the first one, which is around the winter demand, 2008. Now, what we would like to do with the winter demand is that we would like to accelerate any demand side management options. In other words, change the light fittings into to the compact fluorescent lights, which are more energy efficient. We've got quite a huge program that is looking at managing demand by making sure that we use less energy than we would otherwise have used. On the supply side, and what we are doing currently is we're looking at making sure that all our major plant has been maintained, and that the risk of
those plants being out on any extended outage is actually reduced so that we can have a reliable source from a supply point of view. But because our reserve margin is so small, we actually need to make sure that from the demand side, everyone in South Africa has to make that contribution where we actually reduce the demand. What we also do in times where we have a shortage, as you would have seen on TV as well, that we run what we call the power alert, which basically just indicates to the household that the system is very, very tight. And we have actually found that we get a lot of positive response from from the South African community to start reducing their energy requirements so that the system can remain stable. So those are our efforts from a supply side point of view and also from a demand side point of view, where we want to make sure that we have manageable demand and also make sure that there is security from our plant and that our power stations can actually operate throughout the winter. But again, I must emphasize that with a very tight reserve margin, you know, it really becomes very difficult and very challenging when you have a situation that you don't have much, much leeway to play with, and that anything small can actually trigger load shedding. So I cannot sit here and say there will not be load shedding. All I can say is that we will do everything that we can possibly to make sure that there isn't any load shedding that takes place, particularly in winter.
Maybe to extend that to say, what is the involvement of provinces and municipalities in this regard to make sure that they are also, you know, part of the alleviation of the current energy situation?
Correct. It is through that national task team that I mentioned. But I think at a regional level, and I would just like to give Peter an opportunity also to respond, at a provincial level, there is interaction with the provinces to make sure that they drive provincially the demand side management programs that we would like to get in place so that the provinces can also contribute in making sure that they reduce their demand. Madam Chair, if I could just hand over to Peter, and he will just say what is done in this particular province, but in other provinces we also do similar as well.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. At provincial level, ESCOM, together with the provincial structures, they have set up what we call the Energy Risk Management Committee. The purpose of the Energy Risk Management Committee is purely to deal with energy demand that has been forecasted, and also to get the provincial stakeholders involved in that process. Now, in those Energy Risk Management Committees, you have local government represented there. You also have municipalities represented in that forum. You also have got business represented in that forum as well. And in that forum, ideas on how we can save energy, ideas on how different sectors can contribute, commercial, agricultural sectors, and other stuff, they actually discussed at that Energy Risk Management Committee. And most of the suggestions that come out of there as well are then fed to the national structures that the MD has actually alluded to, which is your national task team, which obviously integrate the overall program for the country. Thanks, Chair.
Madam Chair, perhaps this is more specifically a Western province or Western region, as we call them. This is their specific effort. If I look at the other regions, they also do have structures in their own distribution environment where they have interactions with the key industrial customers within the distribution structure, with the key municipalities within the distribution structures, so that we can engage and work together in making sure that we do achieve that demand reduction from a provincial point of view. Madam Chair, if I can then move on to the issue of the key mines. Unfortunately, I don't have a percentage here for you, unless, Jan, have you, we don't, okay. I don't have a percentage for you in terms of the percentage demand, unfortunately, so we would have to come back to you and pass right to the chairperson and let her know exactly what that percentage is. But what I can say on the key mines is that they actually have contributed a lot in terms of the 10% reduction, in fact, to an extent that it was detrimental to their operations and to their sustainability of the business. They did really contribute a lot of that 10% reduction, and with time, we actually had to start involving the municipalities and particularly the distribution and customers to make sure that they also come and contribute as far as that is concerned. Now, there was a question on capacity and skills to execute our capital expenditure over the next 5 years. You're quite right. There are skills shortages. But I must just point out that we do have a very big recruitment drive that we are doing at the moment. In fact, I came from an interview process that we are busy with in Eskom, where we look for South Africans abroad who would like to come back to the country and who would like to make a contribution to the country. We do this exercise in the United States, and we do it in England as well, where we look for talent that would like to come back. And in all instances, we have been very successful, and we've been doing this program now for the last 3 years, and we're looking for in excess of 3,000 recruits, you know, who have different skills. We're looking for project managers. We're looking for engineers, technicians. We're looking for people who can run and maintain plant. So we are looking at those things. We're looking for nuclear engineers as well, because we know that that is going to be going into the future, one of the types of technologies that we're going to be using as far as our 40,000 megawatts that I mentioned earlier is concerned. Coming back to the effectiveness of that, or the powers of the national task team that has been formed, I don't believe that the powers, it's really a task team of committed people who understand and appreciate the challenges that we are sitting with, and people who really have a conscience to say that we have a problem and therefore we need to work together. And we also work more on, you know, peer pressure. We also work more on encouraging people, showing the results. And in fact, Jan is the one who is accountable for managing that process for us. And perhaps, Jan, you would like to say a couple of things around this, specifically around the question that was asked in terms of what are the powers of this national task team in terms of making sure that we can implement the 10% deduction. I think the question really, the essence of it was that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, just to confirm on the honest test, currently this is actually getting together to get some cooperation and agreement of the problem and buy-in for the issues that we got, particularly around the 10% savings requirement. So we have met, I think, three times. So we haven't engaged with them at the same level as what we did with our key industrial customers. But from our key industrial customers, we were, in a very short space of time, we were able to extract a good portion of the savings, and we're hoping to do the same with the municipalities as well. Currently, I think the task team, there are no powers to enforce anything, but we are looking at mechanisms to assist the municipalities in actually dealing with their customers behind the meter, as we say, to extract these savings from their own customers, and what sort of tools and methodologies they can use to do so.
And then, Madam Chair, perhaps on that...
Maybe I don't know if you're still there. Members of the task team, maybe if you can explain to us, because, you know, we're talking of regions, we're talking of provinces, of provinces. Maybe if you can explain to us where does other provinces fall here in the regions that you are talking about.
Okay.
I just want to add a question that relates to that. I see here on the members of the task team with regards to these municipalities. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and there's a Richards Bay in Bangeni area, which has got a smelter and is highly affected by load shedding. And should load shedding be resumed, we are bound to lose plus minus 800 workers, is what they say. There's also the harbor. And I just want to check on the criteria why the city of Mhlathuze, as one of the cities, is not included.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Let me just get back to that by referring you to slide number 5. Slide number 5, as I had mentioned, we look at the top 12 municipalities, Tshwane, City Power, Ekurhuleni, City of Cape Town, Nelson Mandela Metro, Emfuleni, Rustenburg, Msunduzi, Mangaung, Buffalo City, Ethekwini. I also know that I don't have the attendance register of the task team now, but we have representation from Pietermaritzburg. Is that Msunduzi? Okay. So the top 12 custom, municipalities are represented in that way. Now, on the issue of Richards Bay, where you have a smelter, that smelter does not fall under the distribution business. It actually falls under your key customers. So it is managed through the key customers' interactions. Again, coming to the national task team, we also have our DG for Department of Public Enterprises. She sits at that particular task team. We also have DG for DME. I know there is DPLG representation. I may not know all the names, but in terms of representation, I'm confident that they also sit at that committee. Because also, just not looking at the powers of the committee, but looking at what other role this committee can play, and that is that of advising, you know, being an advisory committee to DPLG, to DME, and also to DPE, to also help us to fast-track, particularly your demand-side management programs, which might have an issue around implementation of the programs. What we will need to do, I think, stemming out of the questions, is to see what other municipalities are not on the list, which actually need to be on the list, because we're meeting on Friday, and we would like to make sure that other people that are critical and key are actually taken on board. I don't know, Madam Chair, if that adequately addresses that particular issue, so that I can move to the next question.
Move, because actually at the present moment, I don't think we are satisfied. Because actually, even coming from the rural provinces, we also need information. How are the people in the rural provinces going to get in the most rural, where maybe there is no TV? You know, where are they going to get information?
Okay, we take note of that. There was a question on the location of the BERT programs, you know, where are they? Are they going to create jobs? These are primarily where the fuel is located, which is Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and specifically Medupi is in Lephalale. Other plants we have in in Durban, in Natal, KwaZulu-Natal province. And that is in the Drakensberg area. We've got the palm storage there. We do believe that those will create employment. So we normally, as a principle, locate our plant where it is closest to the fuel so that we don't have challenges around transporting the fuel to those power stations. There was another question, Madam Chair, on the impact of not granting ESCOM the 53% increase. That's a very difficult one to to try and envisage. But essentially what it means, Madam Chair, if I can just take you back to what I mentioned earlier in the beginning of my presentation in terms of the sources of funding, what it would mean is that we wouldn't be able to fund our program. That's simply what it would mean. It would mean that we wouldn't be able to fund our program. It means that the risk of unstable, unsecure supply would actually escalate because we won't be able to implement our build program. So that would be a very, very big challenge from a company point of view and also from a country point of view, because it would end up having other knock-on effects as a result of not getting the increase. However, I should say that there were public hearings on Friday, as I believe. I was not able to attend as I was out of the country at the time, but my understanding is that the discussions took place. NERSA was supposed to give us an indication of their decision by the 6th of June, and I believe that that has been taken to the 18th of June in terms of the decision that is going to be taken, so that we can allow for more input, or they can allow for more input on their side. In terms of the 60 billion rand and when we're going to have some closure on that, as I speak, Madam Chair, I don't have an answer for you. I believe that it is work in progress. It is work that ESCOM is under discussions with the National Treasury on that particular item at this moment. I think that the other question, Madam Chair, which I will not be in a position to address for you at this point, is that of how the 60 billion rand and how and what the other portions would be, you know, the other two portions would come from of the 300 billion that we talked about, because it also depends on it is going to be impacted by the outcome of what the regulator says on the 18th of June. So I will not be in a position to give you that split at this moment. There was a question, Madam Chair, on the new houses with no electricity at the moment and those that do have electricity. My understanding is that those would be part of the electrification program, and as such, the electrification program is funded by DME. We do have plans for the electrification program, which will take care of those houses that fall under that particular program, and we will be able to fund them as with the contract that we have with the Department of Minerals and Energy. Madam Chair, I think that covers the questions that I have noted. I just need to confer with my colleagues and make sure that I've answered all the questions. It looks like, Madam Chair, I have, but I also acknowledge that perhaps there are one or two questions that we will have to come back to you on because they haven't been addressed adequately.
Honourable Gamede, then followed by Honourable Douglas.
Yes, thanks, Chair. The issue of 53%, I'm sure it has not been in the plan from the previous financial year. All of a sudden, there was this then about the 53%. What was then the initial plan of your build program? You know, now that it has deviated, that there will be a need and a demand for this 53%. And really, to put it in plain man's language, how is it really going to affect us and people on the ground? How is it going to affect our provinces? Because we've never had such a big knock. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the media, it was recently reported that ESCOM has been downgraded in terms of its credit ratings internationally. Has the problems been identified that contributed towards that? And has the corrective actions been put in place to ensure that we once again get to a good credit rating footing? And then also, a lot of the infrastructure, the current infrastructure of Eskom at the moment, of our grid, is getting older. And obviously, load shedding has given even more strain on existing infrastructure. In terms of your build program, what percentage of your current build program will be going towards maintaining and upgrading existing structures?
Thanks, Madam Chair, for those two questions again. The 53% increase, where did it come from? Perhaps let me just take you back a while and just to put some context and say that the way that we have structured and funded our electricity in South Africa has really been very very low. The price increase over the years since the 90s has been very low. And compared to the lowest international companies that we compare with, countries at least, New Zealand and Canada, we've actually been able, with the regulation that we have in South Africa, we have been able to maintain the low levels, which were much lower than what the lowest or the next lowest country is. All with that in mind, you know, we have seen that the price of coal, you know, which is our primary fuel, has actually escalated over time. Now, New Zealand and Canada, for example, decided to go a different way in terms of how they're going to fund and structure their funding to actually reflect the fact that the primary energy is increasing. Now, if you look at what we requested last year, we requested 18% from the regulator, and the regulator gave us 14.2%. Now, subsequent to that, we had a lot of load shedding. Now, one of the things that we do to avoid load shedding is that we make sure that we use all other fuel that we have in our plant mix. As an example, we run the OCGTs, the open cycle gas turbines that we have located here and in Mossel Bay, and those cost us about 2 rand a megawatt hour. So it's very expensive. It's very, very expensive, and we actually end up running them flat out. In other words, we run them at very high load factors. Those two stations were designed to be peaking stations. In other words, just to address the peak in the morning and to address the peak in the evenings, about 2 to 3 hours each time. That is what they were designed for. But because we want to avoid load shedding, what we have done is to actually run them higher at a higher load factor, which means that buying more fuel, which is very expensive. And also not only just expensive, but it becomes another risk in that we impact the transport industry because we then end up using the fuel that would otherwise be used by other transport, the transport industry. So that is the one side. The other side is that if you look at our total coal contracts, about 70% of our contracts are on long term, but we've got a balance of about 30% which is on short term contracts. And those short term contracts we have found haven't really been giving us the coal that we have been requiring because there is an export market that the coal suppliers are selling to. So that has been one of our other challenges. And as such, we have had challenges with the price of coal, which has increased. So part of where the 53% is really coming from is from that primary energy. The primary energy has become very, very high. It's become very unaffordable. And this is basically, and going into the future, of course, you know, with putting the power stations that we're going to be putting on the ground, the coal is not going to be cheaper than what we're getting. It's actually getting more and more expensive. And this is where the increase is required from, so that we can be able to fund the programs, including the fuel. The downgrading impact, I must also just say upfront that I am not a finance expert, but I will share with you what I understand with the impact of the downgrading. Now, the credit rating, from my colleagues and from other people that are in the finance fraternity, I believe is very difficult to improve once you have been downgraded. The way that I understand it is that if you have a balance sheet that is X and you want to fund your capital expansion on your balance sheet and you actually want far more than what your balance sheet has, which is really your security, then you have to have a very good financial outlook as a company to be able to fund that and to be able to get the money as cheap as possible, because really credit rating is really about the point that I raised earlier, that you want to make sure that you get reputable companies to give you the money. You want to also make sure that you get the money as cheap as possible, because at the end of the day, if it's not cheap, it is going to impact the customers, because it is going to be a pass-through and the customers are going to have to pay for expensive loaned money or, you know, high interest. So that is why the credit rating is very important to us, so that we are able to maintain that level and make sure that the money is obtained easily, quickly, and as cheap as possible. So we have, from an ESCOM's point of view, done all that can be done to protect the credit rating. But again, one of the catalysts or one of the factors that contribute to the credit rating, of course, will be all those factors that I mentioned around the funding, the sources of funding. So if we don't get the price increase, for example, then the lenders are really going to be very anxious and of course, look at downgrading. And I believe that once you have been downgraded, it becomes really difficult to get your credit rating up again. And as I said, I'm not a specialist in finance, but that is what I have heard happen. Now, you also mentioned the issue of the aging infrastructure. And we do have programs in ESCOM where we allocate monies. Your capital expenditure is actually split in categories that cover your strengthening of the network. We do have money that covers the refurbishment of the network. We do have allocation that covers the refurbishment of the network, which basically addresses the issue of age, of aging infrastructure, and all of that is really related to when your equipment was put on the ground, how old is it, how have we been doing maintenance, and all of those things. So all of those programs we have, and they actually form part of your capital expenditure program throughout the business, where we say we will put some money in for, we do have money for maintenance, which is given on an annual basis, but we also get money that is allocated for refurbishment, we get money that is allocated for strengthening as well, and we get money that is there to make sure that the security and reliability of supply is maintained at all times.
Okay,
Honorable Gamete. Sorry, Chair. No, I'm still not convinced. I really want to be convinced on this issue of 53%. Not unless somebody is making some wrong arithmetic in the beginning that was made, because initially you requested for 18%. And 18% was for 18%, and you got 14%. Now, what really moved you and motivated you and gave you the heart to say 53%? How really do you reach that 53% when you yourself have said 18%? And before I finish, I understand we use our own coal for electricity generation. We've got coal here in South Africa, and it's not that good quality coal that we use. I think the good one is the one that we export. The other quality is the Y1 that we use for electricity generation. So how do we come about the reason that, you know, we'd be short of the supply of coal when we have our own coal?
Madam Chair, yes, I will pull them in just a moment. The coal issue, as I've said, we have the coal that is here is not the coal. It doesn't belong to Eskom. It's not ours. We buy the coal from the suppliers, and I have mentioned that the suppliers want to also sell the coal elsewhere because they make more money out of it. And this is where we've had challenges, and this is where I've said that the coal price has actually increased as a result of getting better money outside of the country. And this is where we've been having major challenges with the coal suppliers, and we've been saying to the coal suppliers we actually need support and assistance from a government point of view to intervene and to really say perhaps this is a national asset and maybe it needs to be managed in a different way so that you are able to get the coal at reasonable prices. But the fact of the matter is the coal prices have definitely increased. Something else that has contributed to, you know, if you look at the whole situation with the reserve margin that is low, if you look at the situation that we don't have, we need to look at our demand-side management options. Another factor that has really impacted the price increase is the acceleration of the demand-side management program. That has also contributed quite a sizable amount of money in terms of us having to fund that. So there are many factors, and that was not in the that was not a factor when it applied initially for the initial 18%. It wasn't. And the what happened in January, for example, where we had to load shed on a daily basis, you know, culminating in the 4,000 megawatts that we had to load shed on the 24th of January, it was something that was not in the plan, and we had to then look at our funding and how we can deal with the situation. Hence, we had to look at how much more money we need to have, so that we're also able to look at stabilizing the situation. Peter? I don't know if I have managed to convince you. Yes.
Thank you. Let me attempt to convince you. I think if we were to go back at the time when the build program was proposed, it started at 84 billion. It moved to 94, 150 billion, and now it has doubled. What she mentioned is indeed the biggest variable in the whole equation. And bear in mind that the whole world is building new capacity. So when you go to the market, the equipment that you need, obviously, the price is escalating. Every year, you would find that the price might be doubling or so. And we are not alone in this market. We need to respond to environmental issues. So the coal that we are using, yes, indeed, we are still using the very same coal that we get here locally, but it's a different coal. And you would find that the plant that we are talking about, Medupi, the technology that we need to put in, is completely different from the previous coal plant that we have. So all these factors contribute to your price. A simple illustration of your bread, maybe. Last year, your bread might have been costing this price, and then due to all other things that you put together, transportation, wheat price, all those, they increase over time. And that's exactly the situation.
Thanks.
The coal, you say it's a different coal. It's local, but it's a different coal. From where?
No, within my...
locally. But you need to put different technology in order to be environmental compliant.
Okay, members. Are there still any questions? Honorable Chen?
Sorry, just a simple question. Okay. See, for instance, if this year, now we, you know, raise the price for 53%, then what is the next year and what is years after that? Is it a short term, is it a long term, or is it a medium term? Do we have some of an explanation on that there?
I think I might have the figures here with me. When you look at the graph, it's actually quite a sharp spike now to 53%. I think next year we're looking at 43%. But the increase then, what it actually does, it's a sharp spike, and then it then converges towards your inflationary linked price. If I recall, I just wanted to see if I have that slide here with me, and I'll be able to give you better accurate figure.
I understand that you're saying that 53% is what you need in terms of your bold program, but I mean, how did you get to that figure? I mean, why not 50%? And grow it in smaller stages from there. Obviously, 53% plus another 43% is almost 100% increase in 2 years, which is incredibly going to impact our the poorest of the poor in the nation. Can you just explain? I'm still wrapping my head around why we went from 18% to 53%. It's a very difficult thing to wrap around, and why it cannot be maybe incremental instead of just a sharp increase and another sharp increase. I understand that we've got a problem with aging and infrastructure that's not available right now. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. If you can just give some kind of indication to us. How got to that?
We actually, again, we will have to go to that mental picture that I tried to paint earlier, saying that when you look at the source of funding, you have to look at the revenue increase, and I think that's the part that you're actually asking a question about at the moment. We're looking at your debt in terms of what you can get out in the market, and then the third one being the shareholder equity. Now, we actually asked a firm of a firm that has experience in doing some modeling and looking at, if you look at our requirements and also if you look at the demand side program that we would like to execute, if you look at the fuel requirements, if you look at your supply side program that we have, What is the best model for the circumstances? And this is basically where the 53% was calculated from. And also it was really taking into account all the programs that we need to execute. It also needed to take into account the technologies that we are going to be implementing to make sure that, you know, as Justice has already said, that we are environmentally compliant, and also make sure that we don't, we contribute positively to the climate change, which is now an international issue, That is how we came to that figure. It was those studies that were done for us and the modeling that was done for us. And of course, as I said, you know, depending on how you shift, for example, if you say that why not 30%, then we need to go and look at those three contributors, and something out of there will need to actually be increased then, because if you decrease your tariff, then maybe it means that your shareholder equity needs to go up. So those are the different dimensions that are actually taken into consideration in this. And also the issue of credit rating becomes a challenge again, because if that is not well looked after, then it means that it's going to be very expensive to get the capital that we need to implement the program. Sorry, Madam Chair, just on the percentage increase, I think Justice has got the numbers. Chair, it is 53% now, and then it's 43% for next year, and I don't have the figure then for the other years.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know the DG said that
the MD
is in relation to the housing on the ground, that DME, the Department of Malaysian Energy, is responsible there. But this energy increase of 53%, how is it going to affect the subsidies of the poorest of the poor on the ground? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, last week, was it last week that we had that, Jan, the task, the energy summit? There was an energy summit, I think it was two Fridays back, which was facilitated and coordinated by NEDLAC in Johannesburg last week, which was really there to discuss the whole issue of price increase. Now, the housing, as I've said, any electrification-related housing is funded by DME. So we have a program in place, which Peter can actually talk a little bit more about because he's working on environment. We have a program in place every single year. We actually have a program where we connect new households. For example, last year we connected 125,000 connections on this particular program. So that one is ongoing. Now the question, I think, now that you asked your question, that I think I probably didn't really can't answer is the whole question of what would be the impact of the price increase on everyone. You know, it is going to be we all get impacted by the petrol price increase, so it is really in a similar way that we would be impacted in a similar way. It means that electricity will be a little bit more expensive than you would have electricity. But of course, we still have that free basic 50 kilowatt hours a month that is given to the indigent. So that is still not out of the equation. It would still be there. But any additional consumption, I think that the households and anybody, everybody else, in fact, in South Africa that consumes electricity is going to have to pay more for the electricity that they use. That's really the impact that the increase would have.
In the absence of the chair, she has just been called. I'm sure even ourselves as a committee would have to engage even with NESA. But it would be better if we could go deep with you so that when we engage with NESA, we are all on board. I don't know how we are going to do it. But it is quite clear that most of us are going to feel the heat, and we just want the best cushion. That is what we want, on how it lands. and hoping that we'll continue to engage on this matter until we find, you know, common ground. In the absence of questions, which I have got to thank you very much, MD, for this presentation and the whole team, and stress that the doors will be open. We still want to engage on this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And the questions that we couldn't answer, we will make, we'll summarize them and send them through to the chair to distribute to yourself. Thanks very much.